Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, do you guys think in the back that we need to use a microphone? Does that work better? Okay, we'll go ahead and do that then. My name is Carol Bergen, and I'm with the Washington State Department of Ecology, and I want to welcome everyone here tonight. We're kind of surprised by how many of you are here, and we're very, very grateful that you took a summer evening to come out and learn more about the project and what we're going to be doing. And we're going to have an opportunity for you to ask questions a little bit into the program. I wanted to acknowledge a few people here this evening. Senator Morton is here. Thank you for being here. We appreciate that. And Mike Gibler from the Toxic Cleanup Program of Ecology is here. He is the supervisor of that section for the whole eastern region. We have Brendan Dowling, who is the site manager. He'll be doing the presentation this evening and doing the question and answer. And then we have Rhonda Kessel, who is here, and she's from the Washington State Department of Health. And then we have Matt Schantz in the back there from the Northeast Tri-County Health. So we have some good representation here to listen to your questions tonight as well. In the back, there's a purple sheet that has the agenda on it, kind of how we're going to do this meeting tonight. The plan is to obviously welcome an introduction, and then we're going to move into the presentation by Brendan. The way that we normally do it at meetings is we ask you to hold your questions until he's done with the presentation. That helps the presenter to get through all the material. But what I'd like to know from you is if you're okay with that, if you're going to be able to hold your questions until he gets done, or if your preference is to ask as you're going. Sometimes people have a hard time remembering the questions.
How long is this presentation?
It's going to be about 25 minutes. So you want
to... Were you surprised on the amount of people joining us?
summer night, you know, we found that a lot of times when we have public meetings, we get a fairly small crowd. And we love it when we see people come out because it means you're really, truly interested in the project. And, you know, we spend a lot of time and energy putting these meetings together and wanting to communicate with the community. And so when we have a meeting like this and you guys come out, it provides a much greater opportunity for a two-way conversation. And I think that benefits you, it benefits us, because then we know where you stand in terms of what we're trying to do, and we can look at ways that we can do things that take advantage of the information that you might have that we don't know about. So are you guys okay with holding the questions till the end? Okay, if you have a real burning one that you feel like you can't hold, just raise your hand and we'll try to accommodate you as we go. I'm going to be taking notes, too, just so you know, when we get to the question and answer part. I'm going to try to jot down your questions, and then eventually we'll answer those and put them online, too, so that we can have them, or folks that didn't come to the meeting can see what the answers are. I'm not going to be able to get them verbatim because I'm not that fast, but as I'm doing it, if you think I'm not capturing your question, just raise your hand and let me know, and I'll address it appropriately. So I'm going to turn the time over to Brendan, and we'll go ahead and move forward.
Oh, can I say one of
Sorry, I forgot to mention that in the back, along with the agenda, we have a comment form. So if you feel by the end of the meeting tonight that you want to submit your comment, you can do that. There's a box back there. You can put it in the box, or you can give it to Brendan or myself. The nice thing is, on the back, there is some information about how to submit an effective comment. And the reason that we put that on there is because sometimes people just say, we don't like you guys, we want you to leave. And we appreciate that comment, but it doesn't help us in terms of the project and where we're trying to go with it. So if you have information or you listen to what we're talking about and you think, gee, maybe you're missing this point and you want to submit that, we've had people in the past at some of our other sites who submitted really great comments, and we've actually made some changes to our work plans and that and adjusted according to the information that we've been given. So that's really helpful. The other thing is, Department of Health has a couple of forms back there. One is an informational form, and one is a form if you want to fill it out. It's a questionnaire. You can do that also. So those are some other key pieces of information. Now I'll let Ben get started. Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Well, thank you guys, like Carol said, for showing up, and I'll just jump right away into the presentation. So a lot of you guys already know, this is a quick little overview of the site. We've been including the back of the fact sheet that we handed out just last week. And just kind of give you a quick overview of what we're looking at for the site. We're presently right here. And just kind of give you an idea, this is where the old mill was, basically directly east of here. And old mill and the waste rock pile, and the old upper Cameron pile, which was functional until the early 60s, and that's about 10 acres in size. And then the lower tailings pile, which is just right around the bend up here, that's about 40 acres in size. So that's kind of the main areas of the site in general. Doesn't include everything, but that's main areas that we're going to be focusing on. Some of you guys may be familiar with the history of the site, but I just want to give you a quick overview of where we are, where we have gotten to today. The Van Sill Mine was discovered in 1920. Hecla Mining Company soon thereafter started doing some exploratory work. However, they really didn't do any mining or milling at the site. They just kind of looked in there and see what the ore deposit was. It was into the American Smelting and Refining Company in 1951, better known as the Sarco. Did they actually start activities and actually doing quite a bit of the production at the Van Sill Mine. They ceased operation in 1970. And between 1970 and 1990, there was a few minor operations going on at the mine site. However, most of the production was stagnant during that time period. While the circle was in operation, in 1961 April, the upper tailings pile failed pretty significantly, where a cascade of water came down and reached all the way down to the school, releasing a lot of the tailings that occurred up there. Well, that's some photos of what that looked like, or what it looks like now. So that's one of the areas of concern that we have, and what's part of our focus for the study. As a result of that failure, the lower tailings pile was constructed further downstream, just right up here on the road. And that's where the majority of the tailings is now located at. And then from 1990 to 1994, Equinox Resources took over the operation of the mine and operated for just a brief amount of time. And then they shut back down due to mineral prices. And then in 2007, just recently, the mill was removed. The foundation still exists up there, but all of the machinery and the structure itself was removed to off-site. Some further history, kind of general idea what the production was at the Van Sill Mine. Asarco did 7.5 million tons of the mining, while Equinox only did just a little over 1.25 million tons. The tailing piles are sized, like I mentioned, the upper one is just under 10 acres. The lower one is about four times that size and 40 acres. And you can see how much dramatic difference is between the two tailing piles. The upper one is just under a million tons, however, the lower one is just under 2 million tons. So that's quite a big difference between the two tailing piles. And the waste rock pile itself, that's roughly 50 acres in size. So that's another significant source that we're going to be looking at. So here's some quick pictures of what the site looks like in the last few years. The upper left is where the old mill used to be. This is just what the foundation looks like. All the structure had been removed at this point already. So just mostly just the concrete foundation that's remaining. This upper right-hand picture is just an overview of the waste rock pile. Basically, this what looks like this today still. And this middle photo here is where the actual mine workings were, where all the exploration and mining took place. The upper tailings pile, this picture was just taken just this past June. This only shows about half the upper tailings pile. And you can see right here, this is where the 1961 failure occurred. And this gives you a little bit of overview exactly what that looks like. As you can kind of see in this picture, there's some actual continued erosion going on. And another smaller rent actually occurred this past May, just from our observations. Nowhere near as significant as the 1961 failure. However, it did get down to the forest, and that's something that we're going to really look at as part of the investigation, just how significant it was and how far the contamination reached. The lower tailings pile, a lot of you guys probably already seen it. It's pretty easy to drive by. However, just kind of give you a quick overview. Here's the top looking of it. This is the eastern pond and lake up on top. And here's from the sidelines of the tailings pile where it's basically eroded over the years and reached into the nearby forest land. And here's a better photo of that, just how much of the tailings have reached into the nearby forest. So, as Carol mentioned, a couple of people that are involved with this is Department of Ecology, myself, and I'm not able to do everything myself as much as I try, but we hired Hart Krauser, an environmental consulting firm, to help out with us, and they did a lot of the writing and of the work report plan that you guys are helping review right now. Department of Health with Rhonda helping us out with that. Department of Natural Resources, they're involved because they have oversight of the mining industry in the state of Washington. And so they do have they oversee the reclamation bond that is currently in place on the mine itself. And then the people that we have named as potentially liable parties is the Callahan Mining Corporation. They're associated with some of the mining operation that occurred while the mine was basically shut down state between Carson and Equinox. Equinox Resources own and operate the mine between 1990 and 1994, and they still own quite a bit of property right now. Sundown Holdings, they actually owned some of the property prior to selling back some of their land back to Equinox Resources just recently. And then Boggin Brothers Lumber Company, they actually own the Upper Town Tile currently. So where are we in the whole process of at the Vanscoil Mine in terms of how Ecology operates the site? Well, the site discovery municipal investigation was just done recently in 2007, and then we ranked the site. So where we're at currently is the remedial investigation and feasibility study. The remedial investigation is basically what we're planning to do in the work plan. Went out investigating how much how contaminated is it, the extent of contamination, and what the risks are. The feasibility study takes all that information that we gather in the remedial investigation, and then it comes up with a bunch of alternatives that evaluate here's the different ways that you can potentially approach the remediation of the site. Once that is done, we're going to end up that document for review, and then we're going to come up with a selective cleanup action, a CAP. Once that's kind of decided, we're going to have that out for review also, and we're actually going to conduct a cleanup. So what prompted Ecology to be here today and actually start looking at the Vanscoil Mine? Like I mentioned earlier, we did a site hazard assessment, an SHA, and that was in 2007, and the site ranked 1 out of 5 with 1 being the greatest risk. Basically, how the rating system works is just evaluation of contaminants that are of concern, that are a threat to human health and the environment, and how accessible are those contaminants. Just very quick overview of that assessment. What happened next was right after that was Equinox entering the Ecology's voluntary cleanup program to help clean up the site. And at that point, due to lack of adequate progress with Equinox, we decided to move the site into the formal cleanup under the authority of the Malpractice Control Act. And then fortunately, in 2010, Ecology received a settlement against lawsuit against the Sarco for $3.5 million for the Vanscoil Mine. So that's currently, we have that available for the Vanscoil Mine for the investigation and cleanup. That's just the Sarco's liability, a portion of their liability. There's still going to be plenty of money needed beyond that, but that's what Sarco has given up as part of their bankruptcy court, multi-site case with the Sarco. So right now what we have is one of the documents that you guys have for review is the agreed order. What the agreed order is actually a legal document that's an agreement between Boggin Brothers and Ecology, the state. And what that order requires is a remedial investigation, what we're hoping to do very shortly, and a feasibility study between being completed at the Vanscoil Mine. Boggin has actually signed that document, and that's what you guys have for review. Part of that document is also asking Boggin for access to the site, which they have agreed to. Unfortunately, right now, with the agreed order, Equinox has not signed the document because they do own part of the property, so they are seeking alternative means to the court system to actually gain access to the property, and that will be taking place in later September. So, kind of quick overview of the remedial investigation. I kind of mentioned that what we're going to do is study the site, how much risk is there, extent of that contamination. And so basically what we're going to do is research the historical uses of the site. The work plan that you guys have available explains a lot of that already. However, we're going to kind of take it a little bit step further based off the information that you guys are able to provide that you may not have had access to previously. Review the previous investigations, a lot of that is already described in the work plan that we reviewed. And then we've already identified what data is already missing from the gas stations. And right now, we've identified that we need a lot more samples out there that really characterize the site. A couple of the things that we're planning on doing as part of the swimming investigation, do some ground well, install some ground water balancing wells, do some soil boring on the tailing piles, collect and analyze soil, sediment, groundwater, and surface water samples throughout the whole the site and the surrounding area. And we're also really concerned about the stability of the tailing piles, particularly the lower tailing pile. If you guys drive up it, it has some brief speed slopes and there's a lot of erosion going. So we're going to analyze the stability of those and determine how stable they are and if they need to be addressed. So some of the contaminants that are concerned that we're going to be really focusing on as part of the renewal investigation is arsenic, adenine, blood, and zinc. There's a few other contaminants that we're also going to be focusing on the side. However, these are the four main drivers that are associated with this site, particularly since it was a lead zinc mine. So these contaminants are most commonly found at these types of sites, and so they're the main drivers that we're going to be concerned about in using kind of the focal point of this investigation. So right now, at this point in time, we're just kind of want to give you guys some preliminary recommendations on how to kind of keep you guys yourself and healthy, safe and healthy. And what we ask you guys is not to go on a tailing pile for the mill area. Part of that is just for general safety. There's a lot of exposed high cliffs at the mill site. There's open concrete pits, old lumber that can break under your feet. At the mill, at the tailing piles, there's steep slopes. Climbing around, you never know if you might slip, causing erosion, and get there underneath the tailings. That would not be good. Also, we just don't know specifically the mill site how contaminated it is. But we do know that from previous investigation, there is some type of contamination at the mill site and also the tailings. We just want to learn that exposure that you had at those areas. The one you guys referring from swimming, I was referred to that it's actually Wilson Creek. You know, on the map, it's the USGS is labeled as Onion Creek. Over the creek that flows right next, probably through the property, we'd like to have you guys refrain from swimming there or drinking from there. Right now, the surface water samples that we have collected or seen from previous investigations basically show that there is no need of concern. However, until we really further investigate and collect some really good quality surface water samples, then we really know the extent of contamination there, and we just kind of want to keep you guys safe. And so right now, we're just going to recommend just kind of refraining from going in there swimming. And then one of the last measures, one of the other measures that we want to keep you guys doing is just keeping on non-dust, minimizing your household or in your driveway. You guys can see it's driving up the road, it does get pretty dusty. The tailings, unfortunately, has eroded on two parts of the road. And so we're just going to want you guys to kind of limit the amount of dust that you get in your household because that's one of the fastest ways to get into your biosphere inhalation. Mm-hmm. And then we at the Ecology Health Department requested a DOH health consultation. So Rhonda will be seeing that over that. And so we'll be doing that as part of the renewal investigation. So a little bit further in depth on the sample collection that we're going to be doing as part of the study. Both discrete and composite samples will be collected for soil lab analysis. We want to make a discrete versus composite. Discrete sample is an actual individual sample that we take and then we're going to send that to the lab for analysis. Composite sample is actually going to be a couple samples from a very small localized area that we can combine into one sample and then send to the lab. The reason why we kind of do some composite samples, that way we're able to do more sampling across a broad area so we can analyze the site a little bit more further. And that is just one of our ways to cover more of the site. However, that's just for soil. However, all the other media will have actually just discrete lab samples only. So for like surface water, we're only going to take one sample and send that to the lab. We're going to do additional 339 soil samples screened by XRF. And what XRF is different from a lab analysis. XRF we're going to use is like a handheld device, and then it just basically it's not as accurate as a lab analysis. However, it does give us a pretty good estimate of what the concentrations are in the soil or the sediment. And that way we can actually refine where we're going to do the investigation and take the lab analysis samples. So therefore, we're not going to be taking lab analysis samples where there's no contamination. We want to take the samples where we do know we're finding out contamination is just finding extent of contamination. What we're appointing with the groundwater monitoring wells, we're planning on installing 5 additional groundwater monitoring wells, 2 on an upper downed pile, and 3 additional ones in the lower downed pile. Right now, there is some monitoring wells near the lower downed pile, where we don't know how functional those are. They may have collapsed over the years. So we're planning on bringing 3 additional ones and see if we can use the ones that are already previously installed as part of the investigation. And then lastly, we're planning on bringing on having some of the residential groundwater monitoring groundwater wells to be sampled. At this point, we haven't identified any of the wells, but if you would like your well to be sampled, please contact us. And we're not going to be able to sample every single well. However, what we're going to do is to get a broad coverage of the wells in the area. That's where we're going to have to cover all the different areas of the site and potential impacts that may have impacted by the site. And here's just a kind of a quick chart that kind of describes all the different samples that we're going to be collecting in the amount. So for background samples, we just use that to determine what the background area location, the background concentration is in the area. So we use that as part of the investigation and compare that versus the site. So as you can see, we're planning on collecting 126 individual samples, and that's just the lab, these are just the lab samples, not the extra samples. Surface water, we're going to plan collecting another 37. Groundwater, 14, and 7 35 samples. And as you can see right here, we have a residential property. We're planning on sampling the residential property for soil, and also in the driveway, and also the groundwater. We just haven't identified how many we're going to do. We are planning on taking them. We're waiting to hear from you guys. Where we're going to take them and how many we're going to take. But we do have that plan. So this is kind of give a brief overview of some of the focus areas where we're going to do some of the sampling. This right here is upper county pile. And just the way the picture is, kind of doesn't really show it, the geographic scope of it. So right here is a fairly gentle slope leading into here. And once you hit the edge of the tailings pile, there's a pretty significant drop off right down into the creek. And this is this little white area right here. This is where the 1961 failure occurred. And there's some other erosion that occurred up here. What these orange dashed lines areas, these areas indicate is where we're going to do some of the composite soil sampling. So we're going to be able to cover those areas. And the reason why we're focused on this is where the erosion occurred in 1961 and most recently in June and May this past spring. So we're going to do a lot of focus in there. This is going to limit where we're going to go. We're going to, if we find that the contamination has gone beyond where these areas are, we're going to keep on going until we find where that the extent ends. This is going to give the general scope of what the plan looks like. Oh, just to mention these two dots right here, these are where we're planning on bringing the monitoring wells about the tailings pile. This is the lower tailings pile. Again, this is just through being on the site and doing some observations. We have noticed that there's quite a bit of erosion that has occurred over on this side of the tailings pile. Doesn't mean we're not going to sample over here, but we are planning on doing some sampling over here, but we're going to do a lot more sampling over there just because it's the city of the street over here, so that's where the concern is. And each of these dots, again, represent where we're planning on bringing additional monitoring wells.
And the broken black line is the Cluxton and the Creek Road?
Yes, that's right.
And then finally, the waste rock pit like in the area. Again, outline of where we're going to be doing composite sampling for the soil. We're planning on taking 3 samples, composite samples from this area to cover this whole area. And then each of these little outcroppings right here are each going to receive a composite sample. So a sample made up of like 30 samples to cover all areas and be deposited into one sample. Additionally, we can do SRF analysis in each of these areas. So once we have all the data collected, we're going to analyze it and we're going to come out and we're going to develop a report called our remedial investigation report. And part of that report is going to be the feasibility study, which I mentioned earlier. And what that's going to be in the feasibility report is going to discuss the different cleanup options that are available or we feel is available at the site. It's in the major elements of that document. will be adaptation to clean up levels. The remedial actions and remedial alternatives that are available. Evaluate alternatives based on MACA, what we have available to work under in MACA. And then we may offer a preferred cleanup action. However, at that point, that's just kind of optional at that point. If there's an option that's very identifiable, and then we'll name it, but it's one of those things that we'll have to wait and see what goes once we have the report in hand and all the data in hand. And so some of the requirements that we have under the Model Toxic Control Act is, of course, protect human health and environment. Comply with those cleanup standards, and the cleanup standards are developed to protect human health and environment. And comply with the applicable state and federal laws. And what that means is comply with the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act. Also, with DNR, they have a reclamation bond on the site that has called for reclamation of the property, for the lower tailings pile. And so we're going to have to comply with that law, what they have required for EPMS to do, make sure, as part of our cleanup, to make sure that we match what they're expecting to have happen at the lower tailings pile and the remainder of the site. And then we want to use permanent solutions to the maximum extent practical. So there's a solution out there that, you know, they're able to give the most permanent solution. We want to try to go for that. We don't want to be out here every 5 years trying to do a remediation over and over again. We want to select the remediation that's going to give us the best permanent solution out there. And some other additional requirements. We'll have to do some compliance monitoring to make sure that what we did, in fact, actually clean up the site and provide a remedy. Provide for a reasonable restoration time frame. We don't want to be out there for 30 years trying to clean up the site. We want to be able to, what we do is a lot to be able to clean up and address the issues at hand fairly quickly. And then consider what you get to have for comments. So a little bit further in the permanent solutions. Permanent actions, basically clean standards should be met without any further action. So it could be removing it, destroying it, or those kind of some of the options. Permanent to the maximum extent practical. Part of that's going to be involved in doing a cost-benefit analysis. You know, sometimes we do have a cost-limiting factor on here, and that's part of the situation. And so we're going to kind of look at what each remedy is available to us, what's the benefit out of it, and what's going to be the most cost-practical. And then if two or more alternatives are equal in benefit, the least costly option will be selected to get benefit overall. And so some of the next actions, we're going to review and respond to public comments that we received on the agreed order and work plan that you guys are currently reviewing. Then after that, we're going to send out a remedial investigation and feasibility study report. That will occur in early 2013. What we plan on doing is start collecting samples early this fall. And then once we get that data collected, we're going to do a free analysis of that data. And if we see anything that's really for you guys need to be aware of, any immediate actions that need to be taken, we're going to inform you guys about any of those necessary actions. And based off of those initial study, we're going to determine if we have enough data, or we can write a final report and do the feasibility study, or if additional data needs to be collected. Sometimes we just miss something, or we weren't able to collect enough samples in certain areas, and then there were still some questions out there. We'll evaluate that at that time. And then after that, so you guys have the ability to comment on that report. And once that report's done, we're going to prepare a draft cleanup action plan. And that plan is actually going to outline what we have decided to actually implement at the site for a remedy. That will happen in mid-2013. And this is a really aggressive schedule for us, just kind of the fact that the size of the site and all the work that needs to be done here in terms of investigation is pretty aggressive. And then once the DCAP is out for comment, that will be available for public comment. And once that's out and that's finalized, we'll actually be on the ground doing the cleanup. So who can you talk to? Well, you can talk to myself. I'm the site manager for the site. I oversee the cleanup and month at the site. My phone number is listed and also my email and address. Bill Pease, who is the person helping with me from the college, he's only able to be here tonight. but he's an environmental engineer, and so he's helping me out with some of the engineering aspects of the site. And then Carol Bergen, we met briefly. She's our public involvement person at the site, for the site, and her contact information is also available. And then any health-related questions, you can contact Rhonda. She'll be able to help you out as much as possible. And her contact information is listed here. And then if you want a local contact, there is Matt in the back right there to be able to help you out. And, just because. And thank you. And if you guys have any comments or questions, you can take those right now.
Well, I've got two concerns. First of all, is whether our drinking water in our wells is safe to drink. And second of all, is the first tailings pile failed, all right? It was near a creek. Why the heck did they put another 40-acre one next to a creek again? That just seems like somebody was...
Not thinking,
yeah.
Well, the first question was concerned about the drinking water well, if it's safe to drink from the well. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of data from groundwater wells around the site. That's why we're going to do some additional wells out there. The wells that we do have some of the data from have shown that there isn't much of concern with some of the drinking water, but that's something that we're going to be addressing out there. And just unfortunately, that's not a lot of information we have at hand. However, right now, we'd say it's pretty safe to drink. In terms of why, and if you do have any questions about that, you can contact Rhonda. She'd be the best person to contact for that. But the second part of the question was, they built the Albert Tamlin's pile right next to the creek. It failed, and then they built the Lower Tamlin's pile next to another creek. Was that smart thinking? No, it wasn't. However, that was done back in 1961, and fortunately, we didn't have a lot of laws at that time that would be able to limit what they were doing at that time. So unfortunately, it happened, and there's not much we can do about it right now.
Do you have a comment you want to ask?
No, other than if you have a question about your well and you have any and you've done any tests on it yourself, I'm happy to talk about anybody's well and the data that they've if you've had your well tested. And it's always a good idea to test your well. Municipal places test the wells and have standards, and I'm happy to talk about that.
But where can we bring our water to get it tested?
I can give you some information if you leave your name.
Okay.
Where you can get your well tested.
Thank you.
And also, we can post that on the website. The fact sheet has where our website is, and we're going to post Brendan's presentation tonight. We'll post these questions with the answers, and then we'll also post that information. So for folks that aren't here, so you can have access to that.
Yes, sir. I'm Bill Swartz. I'm the person who, for 40 years, has lived the closest to the lower tailings pond downwind.
Yep.
I have a couple points and a question and actually a plea. One little quibble. It's not Lutz Creek. Lutz Creek is a tributary from the south. The one you're dealing with, principal one you're dealing with, is the east fork of Onion Creek. Your PLPs, I hope you're aware that Equinox no longer exists as an independent entity, that on July 20th, they were acquired by Barrick and their stock was delisted, and that Calhan and two other companies, which were part of the exploration programs, U.S. Borax and British Newfoundland Exploration, are all now wholly owned subsidiaries of Rio Tinto. And another point, I feel that you're not considering nearly enough site and not enough sources of contamination. Mm-hmm. During those years when Sarco operated the mill and mine, the concentrates were carried to the railroad siding at Northport in untarped dump trucks, and repeatedly tailgates failed, and they wound up with the siding empty. So, and the rock that was used to metal the private road from the mailboxes up here to the mine is all split from the ore that came out of the secondary crusher circuit. So that's all contaminated. Local people who lived here at the time used a lot of that rock to their driveways. Another source of contamination were the tailings lines. The tailings went from the mill to the lower tailings pond, initially in 3.5 miles of 8-inch wire-wound cedar pipe. I don't know when that pipe was replaced with 8-inch trensite pipe. That is a concrete product that's reinforced with Praxiteal asbestos. And while the operation was inactive, a lot of that pipe was looted and used for residential purposes. And also, constant maintenance headache with both those pipes. They would break, just go tailings. The idea was to thicken the tailings as much as possible and still get them to move so that they could retain their processed water up at the mill to retain the expensive reagent. So quite frequently that pipe would plug and it had to be disassembled, and the disposal method was to throw it to the side. So that entire 3.5 mile pipeline is contaminated.
For a long time now.
And my question is, why are you not considering contamination by tremolite asbestos? Tremolite constituted about 5% of the country and ore rock. And tremolite asbestos is a terrifically dangerous substance. Ask anybody in Libby, Montana.
Thank you.
And I would make a plea that you seriously consider that.
Yeah.
Thanks for the question. And I'm just going to try to recap what was all part of the question, comment, and concern. The first with the TLPs, that's additional information that we would love to hear from you guys, with Equinox, you bought out, et cetera, and some other TLPs. We are aware of the Callahan being bought out.
I was an exploration geologist at the Vanstone in 1971 and 2 for Callahan, and 1974 and 5 for Callahan and Borax and Drainage.
It was recently bought up by, as far as our information, this is they're owned by Quarterly Mining, Quarterly Mining Corporation. So with the PLP information, we'd love to have any information that you guys have. We've done as much research as we can and so what's available to us, but certainly people who have worked at, during that time are able to provide a significant amount of resource for us.
Can I just say too that I didn't capture everything that you were saying, so maybe if you can shoot us an email to Brendan,
And then they kind of addressed, you had a lot of concerns about the roads, the town capital, and the residential properties. As you kind of saw in that table that I had, we have called out for, we are aware that a lot of the residents may be contaminated with some of the tailings or the waste rock that was used. Certainly, it was open air for people to take or might have been used as a company. We haven't identified any properties because we don't have any specific properties that we're aware of where that is, but we have information that it was used. We have called out that we're going to sample those properties where people have requested that they feel that they may be contaminated with that. And also, the roadway is also planning on being sampled as part of the investigation, in addition to the tailings pipeline. We actually have called out for actually following the whole tailings pipeline and taking samples and X-ray samples through the whole extent of that tailings pipeline. And part of the asbestos thing, we can definitely include that as part of the investigations for us. And So we'll make sure to include that, but we have included already the ball of whole tailings pipeline, because we were aware that it had failed. We don't know exactly every location, but we dedicated ourselves to actually follow the tailings pipeline and see where or not it failed, if it's observable, not, we can go out and take samples where just the whole tailings pipeline. So hopefully that covers a lot of your concerns. But please, if you have any additional information, please shoot me an email or call me up, and I'll take any information I can get.
Okay. You didn't give us much in the way of dates about when you're going to do the things that you intend to do. You gave us two dates in 2013. I hope you meant 2012. But are you really talking about a year and a half to 2 years before your next milestones?
Yeah, exact dates. That's when we're going to get out in there and start sampling. That's going to decide how quick we're able to respond back to your comments. So we're planning on starting sampling in October. That's when we're going to plan and start sampling. This period of sampling is going to take about 4 weeks of what we're having planned. So that's all the way through October, if we're able to keep the weather and some of the other situations. And then we're going to take that data, and we're planning to do another round of sampling in spring. Once we evaluate all that data, it's going to take a little bit to evaluate that data to see if we have any data gaps. If there's no data gaps, then we're able to start writing the RI report and FS report at that point in time. If we identify further data gaps, we're going to have to be out back here taking additional sampling. So what that timeline, what I showed in early 2013, like February 2013, when we come out with a report on the RIFS, that takes into consideration just in case we do have to get out here, do another evaluation with all the, with more studies, just in case we didn't get all the data gaps that we need to know to address, come up with remedies for the site. Hopefully that.
So when do you expect to start remediation?
Remediation, hopefully, like I said, in 2013, that has identified one. We plan on coming out with the draft cleanup action plan. That document will describe what we plan on doing for ecology, what we plan on doing to clean up the site.
When are you actually going to do it? What's the question?
After that, we have a 30-day comment period. If everything looks great, after that 30-day comment period, we'll be out there as soon as possible, early that fall. If there's concerns that we need to address, that you guys mentioned part of that cleanup action plan, that we need to reconsider our plan for cleanup, we'll have to go back and readdress that and go out for another comment, and hopefully that will resolve it, and then we'll be out there as soon as we can get that taken care of. But we want to hear your comments first on that cleanup action plan.
Let me just add one thing on that. You know, one of the things is we don't know what we're going to do. We don't know. So we're doing the remedial investigation. We understand the problem. We look at the potential remedies. We go through, you know, interacting with you folks, doing the public comment periods, getting your feedback. We do this cleanup action plan. We get through that comment period and finalize that. Depending on what we're doing, I mean, we might be talking about moving a bunch of big yellow iron out there and moving stuff around. The construction, you know, we've got to go through contracting. There's construction seasons. You all know you live up here. You know what the weather gets like up here. And there's just certain times of the year you can be moving big yellow iron around up on the tail.
You need a water truck on that road right now because all that dust coming down here, all these kids breathing it in, them logging trucks and stuff.
That's a good idea.
So that's it's really hard to say. It could very well be we won't be moving anything around until 2014. We just don't know. But we will be out here as quickly as we can.
I have a couple now. Do you have a diagram of where the tailings pipe was located, or is any of it still located?
Just from me walking around the site, some of the tailings pouches that still exist in both forms. And we actually, as part of the work plan, we've actually were able to put it on the map where that we believe the tailings pipeline has existed from previous documents from Equinox. So,
is it possible for us to get a copy of this map?
This map is included in the work plan. And so the work plan for review, one's available at the office here at the school, and another copy of it is available at the general store. And it's also available online at the website that Kyle mentioned. So that's included as one of the figures.
And we could make copies of this?
Yes.
Okay. The other question I have is in relation to the well water. What about for gardens? I have fruit orchard. I can use fruits off the trees. other people I know have vegetable
gardens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like irrigation water. More or less, yeah.
Is it going to bioaccumulate in the fruit or the vegetables? Are there any recommendations not to eat what we're producing on our property?
At this point in time, I'd drive back then, that question back to
Linda. And are you taking it from, is the water coming from the
from
onion
my
creek,
shallow
or is it come from
well,
your well
that is located right below?
Uh-huh. If you, you'd have to look at what's in your well first. So if you have any well data on your well.
2 years.
Yeah, I mean, we can look at that water and see what's in it. In general, usually the water going to the plants over a long period of time, there's big fluctuations in the well itself. Usually there's not a problem.
What's your current recommendation?
My current recommendation is test your well so you know what's in it. And if you can, over time, I know that's hard, but spring levels are a lot different than fall levels just because of how much water is going through the aquifer. And I would continue watering your gardens. But if you have concerns, absolutely call me, especially if you have well data.
Is it possible to have fruit tested through you?
There's naturally occurring arsenic, there's naturally occurring all kinds of metals that naturally occur in this area. Whether it comes from the mine site is not known. So in general, all over Eastern Washington, people have used well water that has arsenic and produced apples for commercial produce. That doesn't make it better or worse. I certainly don't think that much arsenic is getting into the fruits. I think you should be most worried about washing your fruits, getting whatever's on the outside of your fruit off.
Thank you.
From the dust. I mean, I'd be more worried about the dust.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. I have a couple questions also. First would be directed to Rhonda and Matt. Have there been any health studies done in this area, general area, on the effects of these contaminants have already had on residents? You know, we've cycled hundreds of kids through the school over the years, and I just wonder if you have any data on.
Yeah, in some communities we've actually done blood level tests for lead accumulations, and the nearest being in the Northport area. Those have been relatively inconclusive over the course of a number of samples that occurred over a span of years. So that's the closest example that I could point to that I'm aware of. So there's been nothing specific here other than what individuals may seek through their primary health care provider just on an individual basis. But other than just the Northport stuff, nothing else has been done in this immediate area.
I'm not aware of anything either other than what's been done at Newport. I certainly, if you have health concerns, I encourage you to visit your health professional, your doctor or whoever.
My next question was, you mentioned that DNR has a reclamation plan on the lower tailings pond.
Yes.
Is that plan available for citizens to review?
Yes, that's correct. That's actually available on the DNR's website, and we can actually provide a copy and print a copy of that on the website. It was most recently revised in the early 2000s. So however, that is available for review, and we can make that a little bit more publicly available just so there's a little bit more for you guys going on for your information. It's just going to be on this one website, so we can make that available.
Are you aware if that plan includes replacing vegetation in those areas? There's no vegetation in either of the tailings pond areas.
The lower tailings pond, yeah, for vegetation, it has called out previously for vegetation, for revegetation of that area and some of the slopes. Some of the nuances of the reclamation plan, that's addressed and handled by DNR. We can give you contact for that part of the reclamation plan, what's been called out with that, and give you that contact, the person for that contact.
You didn't mention a tailings pond that I occurred is what the mine houses are built on. There's four houses up there that miners used to live in, and apparently it was built on a tailing site.
Her question was, or observation was, that there were some of the houses that are nearby where the mill facility was, is some of those houses were built on some of the tailings. That's some of the information that we haven't had available on some of the records that we've been reviewing. And so that's some of the information that we're looking for, like I mentioned earlier, find out more information for you guys to provide us. Just through the records that we've gone through, it hasn't come up to us, unfortunately.
I'm concerned that there was a leak or a breakage this past spring, but I didn't hear about it. I don't know who heard about it, if anything, and I'm really concerned if that happens again, that our community gets noticed so that kids are not playing in the creek. You know, we have a lot of recreation here, hiking, RV, ATVing and stuff. So people are out there in the woods, you know, huckleberry picking and all sorts of things, so.
Are you referring to the leak at the Upper Towns pile? I mentioned part of the
yeah.
Yep. No one was aware that actually had happened until I had actually gone back up on the property just to help Kirk Krauser take them out to the site. It was at that point in time when I was out here in early May, late April, the exact date, and again on June 1st. And sometime between then, some of it more had occurred. I was probably the first person to actually recognize that. Fortunately, no one else observed it. Can it happen in the future? Yeah, that potentially can happen in the future. However, right now, it most likely wouldn't happen again for the spring if we do get a lot of snow melt. And that's something we're going to be looking at is, can we, part of the investigation is, can we not prevent that from happening in the future? In terms of being,
my concern is that if it happens and someone doesn't prove it in the part of the study or whatever, even just a visit, that that the community gets some.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I mentioned while we're doing the study. If there's something that we come up with that needs to be addressed right away and for the public to know right away, that's one of the things that we will be letting you guys know where. Because, you know, right now, between now until, you know, early 2013, that's a long time. And we want to keep you guys informed. If there is any information that does come out that you guys need to be aware of right away, that's something that we would be addressing right away.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Regarding water testing in the past, there was baseline water testing done and ongoing monitoring when Equinox applied for a discharge permit, and that all should be on file with the EPA.
Yep, we have it from basically 1990 to 1998, I believe is what the time frame is, and I have all the water data. I have all that.
And that's
actually summarized in the work plan, all that data that was available.
In my research online about this over the weekend, I saw where there is listed a name for a man who's a caretaker, Randy Miller. Is he still on site? Is there anybody up there that is looking over
the site? A lot of you guys probably know Randy. He's no longer the caretaker of the mine site. He was previously when Equinox was more or less putting the button down and shutting down the facility. He has been for a while. He's no longer really involved with the site per se. He has no longer any association, no longer hired by Equinox. Doing any of the work here. He's very resourceful, a lot of information I've received, secondhand information that's not documented. So we have reached out to him to get information from him.
Is there anybody currently on site?
No, there's no one actually living on site or working on site that we are aware of. Yes, sir.
Yeah, as I recall,
a little
bit on the comment about the roads.
Yeah.
Knowing the risk involved, it's inconceivable that something isn't done to keep the dust down, especially by school. Oily, water, whatever. I live right at the end of the Westbrook Road, and you get a cloud of dust from the logging trucks coming down here, and it looks like an Iraqi sandstorm.
And it's pretty, and you can imagine what the school is getting. You know, these are kids.
Thanks for the comment. I did hear your comment about, you know, it seems necessary to keep the dust down. And that's something we're going to have to take back for us. I'm not able to give you guys an answer exactly if we're able to address it tonight, if we are able to address it. But we'll be able to get back to you guys what we're going to try to come up with. Here's the solution to that problem, and hopefully help you guys out with the dust.
It was mentioned that there were two large water tanks that were located there. A 200 million gallon tank and a 20 million gallon tank. Are those still there? Are they full of water? Is that usable water? No water?
Yeah, no worries. The question was about, she had her information, but there's water tanks that were previously on the site. I mean, they're still currently on the site and they still contain water. I haven't looked into that much. In terms of you walk around the site, I haven't actually looked to see what tanks are actually on the site. This is more, every time I've been on the site, you see areas of concern for those particular tanks. Mm-hmm. It's something I haven't actually gone out personally and looked at. And that's something that we can look at if those tanks are still available on site. And that's part of the investigation that we're going to do will actually characterize more of the site than what we have available in the work plan. The work plan is basically just off of quick observations that me or the consultants have had of the site, and also anything that they have on documents that we have. More characterization of what's up in those facilities will be done as part of the investigation.
Yes, sir.
There was a 200,000 gallon processed water tank. Water basically returned from the tailings pond that had reagents in it.
Okay.
And the other tank was 1 million gallons, and that was a steady head tank for mill makeup water. So it was water from the three water sources on the little branches up above the mill.
Now, that would be some other information that hopefully you're going to be able to provide for me, because that's going to be useful.
All of which were drained in 93.
Okay.
I did it myself.
So. there's your answer. Thank you. Yes,
this is maybe jumping ahead a little bit, but we've been looking at the tailings as a problem, or is it possible that these could actually be a resource? I mean, they contain cadmium, zinc, lead, whatever. Is there a way of reclaiming these metals and possibly using that to help fund the cleanup effort?
The question is can some of the tailings, waste rock pile, also can be reclaimed and used part of the process, the running of the site. And that's something that will be done as part of the feasibility study. Right now, we don't have enough information to be able to answer that question. Hopefully, as part of the, we're going to do the green mill investigation, we're going to collect enough data so that during the feasibility study, when we come up with the remedies, that's something that we may come up with as a solution to help remedy the site. At this time, we don't have an answer yet. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Picking up the greater amount of dust. I was just thinking about there's just certain times of the year when that's going to be a problem, but it could overlap into the time when the children are here. Is there some kind of a ban that could be put on that would just postpone the logging operations until it's the wetness
yes.
out there? Yeah.
That's something that would be a lot to discuss between college and school and the county itself. College doesn't necessarily have the authority to ban driving on a certain road. However, that can be discussed with the county, how to best address that, and also the school district.
I think if DOT parked a truck down there, they could probably ticket every logging truck that comes up this road. I'm sure. Listening to this.
Yes, I am. This guy has a question back.
Comment.
Yep.
I know that logging has been doing some commercial logging in the area. I don't know if they're looking at West Creek, but I suspect they probably are. If they were greater in this scenario, even cars might not be ready.
Yep.
To get them to deal with this problem.
And that's something we'll definitely take and consider as part of our discussions with, you know, like helping out with looking at Stevens County and also the school district and find out if it's the county that's going to be able to assist on this, or if it's one of the lumber companies that's responsible for kicking out the wall, just that they needed to help address this. That's something that we'll take back and get back to you guys about.
I didn't hear his question.
He had a comment that Volume Brothers is one of the main lumber companies that's causing a lot of the dust kick up, and since they're one of the main tail keys, if we might have a little more leverage in getting them to assist with kicking down the dust. That's sort of the hat.
That's just more of a personal comment. I've been up there two or three times in the last couple of weeks, and they are bringing logging trucks right near the lower tailing pond, and twice I've noticed water trucks going up there, and you know, they are doing something to knock some of the dust down, but I don't know what
yeah, there are things, we have been up there with our children a couple times the past couple weeks, and I am extremely new to this area. Is there any way that we can put warning signs up or anything? Because, I mean, I would definitely not let my children play where there might be a contaminated site.
Yeah. The question or concern was how warning signs put up on some of the areas. And that's something that we might would like to address as an interim action between now until we actually start cleanup. And that's one of the things we're going to take back and consider doing, is putting up signs saying, you know, area of concern, please don't play here. And again, like we mentioned in here, one of the recommendations is please stay away from the tailings pile in the mill area. Not only due to the contamination that may be present there, but also just some of the other safety hazards that may trip and fall in, rusty metal, and also erosional things going on up there. So just please refrain from those areas.
Yes, ma'am.
This has been ongoing for quite a while, and it looks like it's going to take several years before it's ended. I would suggest that instead of watering the road, we actually
the main road is paved, why not this one? Why not oil it, a little more permanent solution, or pave it? That question is going to be better answered by the county in terms of how to address that issue.
So they are involved?
We'll make sure they are involved.
We'll talk with you.
Let's get that county water truck up.
Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Not to correct you, but the upper tailings pond was last used in 92.
Yeah.
You see that it has a liner in it.
Yeah. We're aware that the liner was put down, and then additional tailings to keep the liner down. But in terms of actual disposal,
92.
Okay.
And then another thing to add on with Bill's concern here of hauling it down the road untarped. When I worked up there, there was a few dump trucks that left there a little bit heavy, so they trimmed their load. I can show you three different piles between here and Northport where they just dumped some out alongside the road.
And
they go to Northport. The rail site was where they're at.
This is
more the fire station near where they dumped.
Right. Well, this is when you and I worked up there. They went to the trail.
Three
different piles
of that. Yeah, and that's if you guys can have a map available, and can put it on the map and then send that to me, that'd be greatly appreciated.
Because
that's definitely an area that we're going to definitely want to look at. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
You talked about cleanup. Have you come to an area where you're going to put the cleanup material?
That's all going to be addressed as part of the feasibility study. Right now, we haven't decided how we're going to remedy the site. That's going to be all going to be addressed down the road, because right now we don't know how much our problem is, where the issues are. And so that's all going to be addressed as part of the feasibility study. Any cleanup actions that can be addressed are going to be brought up in that feasibility study. If there's going to be removal going on, how we're going to do that, that's all going to be future down the road, because right now I'm not able to answer those questions just because we haven't done the process to get there. Yes, sir.
If you're going to drill a well right next to the tailings pond, is there any chance that some of these tailings could get in the way of the drill?
We're planning on doing the actual well, so the monitoring of the two tailings piles. We put them not on top of the actual tailings, but down down gradient or up gradient to see if there's anything coming in off the side. So they're actually not going to be going exactly right directly into the tailings pile. We are planning on doing some soil borings on top of the tailings pile just to get to the further, the deeper material to see if there's any differences in concentrations and in depth profile. For the actual monitoring wells that we're going to put in there, those are going to be pretty deep to see. We're not going to be too concerned about the actual tailings going in just because how deep they are, but also where they're going to be located. That's going to be a way actually off the tailings pile.
The other point too, just to mention real quick, the way a monitoring well is constructed is quite a bit different than the way a residential well is constructed. They're very well sealed up. I mean, we take great pains to make sure that the rules require it, that, you know, we're doing this, we make darn sure that we're not going to have contamination moving down the borehole alongside the pipe. I mean, that's all sealed up really tight. I mean, it's not cheap to drill monitoring wells because you have to take a lot of extra precautions.
So how does it work? Can you explain how monitoring well works?
Well, it is just a well. I mean, as far as what it does, I mean, it's not like it's greatly different in its function than a regular residential well.
But water's going to come in somewhere.
Water's going to come in, but the point is that I was hearing is concern about tailings going down to the water, and that's what we do. We seal it up. We use a lot of grout and concrete monuments around them to keep that from happening on top, as well as grouting it all down the side of the pipe as well. So, and they're really small wells. We don't, you know, where you might use 6 or 8 inch pipe for a residential well, we're using 2 inch pipe. And sealed. So it's a real different, I mean, the way it functions as far as in the water, you're filling water out of the water, out of the aquifer, yeah, it's the same deal, but how it's constructed is very different.
Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
As local citizens, are we allowed to put up warning signs?
Warning signs of what kind?
Well, contamination, lead, poison signs for people that can't read, that sort of thing.
The question or the comment is can local citizens put up signs near the property warning that there may be contamination present? If it's your choice, you're certainly allowed to do it. Just recognize that it is private property. Mm-hmm. And so, even though Equinox may not be in existence too much right now, they do own that property, mm-hmm. So they do it. There's laws about trespassing. So that's, mm-hmm. If you want to put it on your property, that's fine. However, unfortunately, it's just the way the laws work, is that that's on private property.
Can the Department of Ecology, I don't know, can you get something like a judge to say that, to give permission for something like that because of the, for the public good, to put up a warning sign? Is that possible through the courts? Has that ever been done?
What I mentioned earlier in one of the comments is gaining access to the site. And right now, we have permission to go on Boggins' property, conduct an investigation, and we're looking to get court-granted access to go on Equinox's property. And putting up signs can be an interim action that ecology can consider to do while we're doing the investigation, just to make people aware that there may be a potential contamination, and that's something that we can look at doing is putting up signs on those properties as part of our investigation until actual cleanup begins, because we do have that authority to do that as part of an interim action.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Oh, good.
Has workaround sites like this been known to reduce property values?
Love Canal.
In terms of mine sites, as far as above and beyond my purview of, unfortunately.
I suggest just the opposite.
Well, you've got to build your house.
And the reason I say that is that your property value is going to be reduced by a contaminated site. It's already happening. There's a contaminated site sitting there.
Well, I think a lot of us are concerned that it's all been sitting idle and drained down. Now when you start messing with it, you're going to stir everything back up again.
The remedial action, the point of the remedial action is to make the property, make that site safe.
Yeah.
And in turn, it should actually, I mean, I'm not a real estate assessor. I'm not going to tell you what your property values are going to do.
but inherently, if the site is stabilized and safe and the hazardous substances are contained, it shouldn't be a detriment to your property, because an uncontained site should be the bigger detriment.
When you touch that material, you're going to raise dust. You have to add water to keep the dust down, and then
when we test the material, we're going to be doing pretty discreet sampling. We're not going to be out there with bulldozers piling this stuff up, not initially. We don't know what we're going to do in the long term.
If you decide to scoop it up, that's what I'm worried about.
Well, we will have to, if we're going to be picking it up or moving it around the site, I mean, our standard practice, anytime we're, it doesn't have to be a site like this. We could be working in an old landfill, okay, and moving clean dirt. We still have to maintain that dust. We still have requirements under regulations of the Clean Air Act that we can't allow fugitive dust. So those guys out there, when they're moving that dirt, they're watering it, they're keeping stuff wet, and they're moving moist material rather than letting that dust go.
Well, no, that's what I'm worried about. They have to keep putting water on it, which keeps washing everything down as they're picking it up.
Well,
the rain comes down and washes it down anyway.
Can't go off the site. We can't let any water off the site. We can't let the dust off the site. Granted, that'll water go in, but we won't be saturating it to the point of pushing it through contaminants through the aquifer. I mean, the good Lord's been doing as much of that as is going to happen with snowfall and rainfall already. We won't be putting anywhere near that kind of water on it, if we're even doing that. You know, again, it's too soon to say.
It becomes a very controlled environment.
It does.
I had a question about, you know, obviously we're talking health hazards here from various things. And it was mentioned, you know, going to your health practitioner and that kind of thing. But I think that a lot of times a person who is close to stuff like this and could be having it in their system may not know what the symptoms are, what they're even looking for. And if they did, they could go to a health professional sooner and maybe get something done about it to where it wasn't going to affect them the same if they were aware of what the symptoms are and how it's impacting their system. And there needs to be some kind of criteria that people can look at and a checklist. You know, am I experiencing this? Are my kids experiencing
this?
So after they finish their remedial investigation, part of the process is that the Department of Health looks at that data and determines if any of the contaminants are at a level of concern for people. And at that point, we write a report, which also is available to the public. We put here and at the store to tell you these are the contaminants you should be worried about. These are some of the effects that these contaminants cause. These are how you are getting exposed to them or not. So either way, we'll be writing the report. And I suggest that you look at that. But always, if for a personal health concern, that's between you and your medical professional. I'm not a doctor. But I can certainly say these are possible ways of exposure.
Carol wanted to add something in addition to that.
Well, I just get concerned when I hear people talking a lot about the health related issues, because I have seen some facial expressions and see the worry on your faces. And what you need to know is that what we've been talking about tonight is a lot of process, a lot of regulatory kinds of things. But in the process of doing this work, if we find something that we recognize as an immediate threat to human health, we're going to be letting you know that. We're not going to let that go for a long period of time. So you need to know that is our plan, is that we're not going to let everything go till, you know, 2013. If we saw something, you know, in the next week that was of immediate concern, we would be letting you know immediately.
What's the mechanism? The mechanism would be that we would be
contacting most likely the school and the store. That's been a really good resource for us to get information out to you. We try to get a newsletter out through the school, and we'd also send out fact sheets like we did and do the information on our website. And we try to make probably call some folks and, you know, get the word going.
Sign up sheet as well, right?
The sign up sheet back here. I'm guessing that most of you who are here tonight got fact sheets already. But what I do with that sign-up sheet is I go through and check to make sure if you're on there and you want to be on the mailing list and you weren't already on it, that you get on it. So, and then if you know someone that wants to be on it that isn't here tonight, just have them give me a call or send me an email and we'll make sure they're on it. But we also do newspaper notices. Some of you may have seen those. We try to do a pretty broad range of outreach, but if something was an immediate threat, we'd be really ramping up on getting information out to the folks.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a comment that the citizens may be interested in. The school is required to do water testing by law, and we do that. That's another one of our unfunded mandates, but we do it anyway because we're required to. And there have never been any of those contaminants in the school water that we do.
Thank you.
So this is all just more of a concern than it ever showed. Like I said, I've grown up here. I've been in Wayne County Pond for 20 years, 30 years, drinking the water. I went to school here, all of the above, and I'm sure that if anything was a major health issue, it would have been brought to attention by now. But other than that, this is just sort of a historical thing coming to notice now. And so you're doing all this testing and trying to find out how toxic it may or may not be.
Exactly. And from all the previous investigations, we have seen some elevated concentrations out there. However, that's been like in the middle of the tailings pile where there's, you know, that's where the material is contaminated. However, off-site where we've seen additional sediment samples or water samples, surface water samples, we haven't actually seen a lot of concentrations of concern, fortunately. So we do know where it's contaminated. Most of the women see it to the areas where the tailings piles are, the mill area, where you expect them. However, this investigation wants to go above and beyond that, not only to see how contaminated those areas are, but if there's any contamination may have gone past that to areas that we don't necessarily know at this time, or we want to address that in part of this investigation and certainly get back to you to let you guys know, hey, this area, please stay away from this area, or we're going to remedy this area based off our findings.
Okay, so there's not any actual findings due to, you know, like a lot of public wells that are drilled. They automatically test your well before they let, you know, they continue as far as I know. Anyway, people believe they have to test my water before they'll put the pump in and feed my house with it.
Yep.
So none of those reports have shown.
No. The only data in terms of groundwater reports are the ones that are available. Like I mentioned, Equinox from the 90s collected some groundwater samples. As far as what we have, that's the only groundwater data that we have. Now it's directly below the tailings pile. So that's the data we have. Unfortunately, that data is not the best quality data available, but from what we see, it's not a significant concern to us at this point. But there's still some concern out there, and that's what part of the investigation is to see how far that concern goes in the extent of it.
Just a comment to kind of follow up on your point, though, is that that's a good point, is to say that anytime there's been a building permit issued since about 1993-ish, there's been testing required to get that building permit. So if it was a newly drilled well for a building, that information would be there, which would include bacteriological, but also nitrate, lead, and arsenic.
Yep.
And so that information is maintained as well for records. So if you needed that information, it's there. Yeah, we have that. Stevens County Building Department has that as well. So.
Was everyone able to hear what Matt just answered?
Not cadmium.
Anyone not hear what Matt just said?
Okay,
good.
Any other questions?
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Greatly appreciate you guys do provide a lot of information for me tonight. Hopefully you guys are able to provide any additional information to me via phone call, email, any additional information or any concerns that you guys have or comments. You can write on the forum and provide it to us that way, or email me, contact Carol, any additional information or comments that you guys have or questions. You want to hear those, so we're able to address them and get back to you guys as soon as possible.
And I just want to echo what he's saying about thanking you for being here tonight. We'll have this presentation online on that website that's on the fact sheet by tomorrow afternoon. The questions that we've written down are going to take us a little bit longer because we're going to go through and make sure that we've got the answers down and try to recapture the answers that we've given you here at the meeting tonight. So that'll probably be next week or so before we can get that on there. So you know, the comment period ends September 12th, so if you want to give us comments, make sure you get them into us by then. And then we're going to put together what's called a responsiveness summary that will be responding to the main comments that you submitted.
Will there be more public meetings when the different steps come along?
As we move through the process, especially when we have a very interested community, we like to come back out again when we have more information. So when he's talking about the remedial investigation report and the feasibility study report, we're hoping to come back out and talk to you about those reports once we get them. Because then that will give you, you know, you'll have the first report of the study, and then you'll have the feasibility study, which gives you those options about what we're looking at in terms of the remediation. So we'll come back out and talk to you. You'll have another 30-day comment period to provide us more information and feedback. And that's one of the really nice things about this. It's kind of frustrating in terms of the timeline. But we're about public process, and we want to hear what you have to say, and we want to be able to see if that's going to impact us. Brendan's already given you several instances tonight where you've given him information that he didn't have, so this is really great. And we thank you for your time. Those of you that have spent time looking at these documents, I know it can be grueling. We appreciate that. And to those of you that brought children, I just want to give you a personal thanks. Your kids are really well behaved, and maybe they'll be future scientists doing this work someday. So thanks for bringing them.
That was rare.